On this 28th day of September 2011 in San Diego, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we are in Chapter 4, Transcendental Knowledge, and we are on text 24. Brahmarpanam Brahmahavir. Brahmagnau Brahmanahutam. Brahmaivatena gantavyam. Brahma karma samadhina. A person who is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness is sure to attain the spiritual kingdom because of his full contribution to spiritual activities in which the consummation is absolute and that which is offered is of the same spiritual nature. Purport. How activities in Krishna consciousness can lead one ultimately to the spiritual goal is described here. There are various activities in Krishna consciousness, and all of them will be described in the following verses. But for the present, just the principle of Krishna consciousness is described. A conditioned soul entangled in material contamination is sure to act in the material atmosphere. And yet he has to get out of such an environment. The process by which the conditioned soul can get out of the material atmosphere is Krishna consciousness. For example, a patient who is suffering from a disorder of the bowels due to overindulgence in milk products is cured by another milk product, namely curds. This is yogurt. Prabhupada's word for yogurt is curd. The materially absorbed conditioned soul can be cured by Krishna consciousness as set forth here in the Gita. This process is generally known as yajna, or activities, sacrifices, simply meant for the satisfaction of Vishnu or Krishna. The more the activities of the material world are performed in Krishna consciousness or for Vishnu only, the more the atmosphere becomes spiritualized by complete absorption. The word Brahma or Brahman means spiritual. The Lord is spiritual, and the rays of his transcendental body are called Brahma Jyotir, his spiritual effulgence. Everything that exists is situated in that Brahma Jyotir. But when the jyoti is covered by illusion or maya, or sense gratification, it is called material. This material veil can be removed at once by Krishna consciousness. Thus, the offering for the sake of Krishna consciousness, the consuming agent of such an offering or contribution, the process of consumption, the contributor and the result are, all combined together, Brahman, or the Absolute Truth. The Absolute Truth covered by maya is called matter. Matter dovetailed for the cause of the Absolute Truth regains its spiritual quality. Krishna consciousness is the process of converting the illusory consciousness into Brahman, or the Supreme. When the mind is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, it is said to be in samadhi, or trance. Anything done in such transcendental consciousness is called yajna, or sacrifice for the Absolute. In that condition of spiritual consciousness, the contributor, the contribution, the consumption, the performer or leader of the performance, and the result or ultimate gain, everything becomes one in the Absolute, the Supreme Brahman. That is the method of Krishna consciousness. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnanandana Shalakaya Chukshu Unmidatam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master Srila Prabhupada opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So this is a very famous verse. This verse actually is quoted from the Bhagavad Gita, and there's also similar verses in other Upanishads. I say other Upanishads because the Gita is also known as the Gita Upanishad, kind of the summary of all the Upanishadic knowledge. So the basic principle here, now Krishna has introduced again this concept of sacrifice in the previous verse. Previously he was speaking about how one should act in such a way as is non-fruitively, without claiming proprietorship or claiming that one to be satisfied with comes of its own accord, to be free, every activity is free of material desire. This is the general principle he's been enunciating. And in text 23, he introduced again, he did it in chapter 3, here again in chapter 4, yajna, that this only activity in the spirit of sacrifice can really liberate one from the desire for the fruits of one's actions. By definition, sacrifice means that you give up something of value for a higher cause or for another person, and you no longer claim proprietorship over that thing. That is now theirs, or it's being burned up for the satisfaction of the gods or whatever. There's different kinds of sacrifices. And Krishna will enumerate them in the following verses. But here, the basic principle is spoken of, that when that sacrifice is for the benefit of the Supreme Spirit, Krishna, then everything merges into spirit. Meaning that, this building or anything or money, you know, if it's spent for Krishna, then it's no longer material. It's rather it becomes spiritual or regains its spiritual quality. Because as we've been discussing, and as explained in the Bhagavad Gita, everything is coming from Krishna. So in one sense, everything is spiritual. So what makes it material? Material means that we are forgetting its relationship to Krishna and trying to use it for our own benefit. That creates the materialistic covering, and therefore we can't see Krishna behind it. Just like the sun in the sky. The sun's always in the sky. But sometimes the cloud comes to cover the sun. But Prabhupada explains, no, it doesn't actually cover the sun. It covers us. The sun is huge. It's much bigger than the earth, right? But we're so tiny that our eyes can be covered. So we see, oh, there's no sun is not out anymore. But we know the sun is actually there. But this material covering, this is also Krishna's energy. And if we want to forget Krishna, then this material energy will act in a way to help us forget Krishna for lifetime after lifetime. That's Maya's thankless task, you know, to allow us to forget Krishna and also to punish us with all of these miseries because of that forgetfulness. So the solution is precisely to use this material energy in such a way that we regain our vision of the Lord. It becomes spiritualized. And that's what's mentioned here, brahmarpanam. A person who is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, so the first thing we have to sacrifice or dedicate is the mind. Consciousness is a function of the mind and the intelligence. So to become Krishna conscious, and then everything proceeds from that. If you become Krishna conscious, then automatically you'll want to act in such a way for Krishna's pleasure. You know? And if you act for Krishna's pleasure, that will help you become Krishna conscious. They work in complementary ways. So let's go. Brahmarpanam, Brahma Havi. So here there's an actual sacrifice going on. There's butter. You know, Havi is butter. So the idea is that visualize this fire sacrifice. So the fire, Brahmagno, in the fire of consummation, Brahmana, by the spirit soul, is offered. And the spiritual kingdom, so the spiritual kingdom is reached by this process. Gantavyam means it goes. Here we have the Gata Sangasya, right? The previous verse uses the same word, Gata. You see it, the first word? Word Gata Sangasya Muktasya. One unattached to the modes of material nature. So Gata Sangha means your attachment is gone. You see, Gata means to go. And here, Brahmaivatena Gantavyam. Everything is gone to Brahman. You know, it all becomes consummated in the fire of sacrifice. And so your mind, your intelligence, your senses, everything becomes spiritualized. It's like if it's in the iron in the fire. Have you ever heard of this analogy? You know, get into the... Like, there's this dull iron, and then there's the fire. Now, if the iron is, say, a stick of iron, a rod, an iron rod, is held in the fire, it gets hotter and hotter and hotter, and then it becomes as hot as the fire. And it can be used to start another fire, right? So similarly, our consciousness, when it is held in the fire of Krishna, in the sense of, you know, we're thinking of Krishna, we're chanting Krishna's name, we're serving Krishna, then our whole being becomes spiritualized. Because our whole life is one of sacrifice. And so we become Krishnaized, as Prabhupada said. We made it into Krishnaized, but actually Prabhupada would say Krishnaized. You know, everything you do becomes Krishnaized. We saw that with Prabhupada. Every breath, every step, every word, every activity was for Krishna. Was perfectly Krishna conscious. And you could see he had, you know, he was not of this world. He was no longer covered at all, even a little bit, by this material energy. So the basic principle is this idea of this, you know, if the same thing that made us sick, you know, overindulgence in milk products, will be cured by another milk product, yogurt. You know, it's a curing tendency. It tends to alleviate certain difficulties you have if you have an overindulgent milk. So the same thing that's binding us, this material world, can liberate us when it's used properly. And that's the art and science of bhakti yoga. Okay, any questions on this verse? Let's go on. Daivam eva pare yagyam yogina paryupasate brahmagnava pare yagyam yagyenaiva upajuvati. So here the word yagya is used three times in one verse here. Some yogis perfectly worship the demigods by offering different sacrifices to them. And some offer sacrifices in the fire of the Supreme Brahman. Purport. As described above, a person engaged in discharging duties in Krishna consciousness is also called a perfect yogi or a first-class mystic. But there are others also who perform similar sacrifices in the worship of demigods, and still others who sacrifice to the Supreme Brahman or the impersonal feature of the Supreme Lord. So there are different kinds of sacrifices in terms of different categories. Such different categories of sacrifice by different types of performers only superficially demark varieties of sacrifice. Factually, sacrifice means to satisfy the Supreme Lord Vishnu, who is also known as yajna. All the different varieties of sacrifice can be placed within two primary divisions, namely sacrifice of worldly possessions and sacrifice in pursuit of transcendental knowledge. Those who are in Krishna consciousness sacrifice all material possessions for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord, while others who want some temporary material happiness sacrifice their material possessions to satisfy demigods such as Indra, the sun god, etc. And others who are impersonalists sacrifice their identity by merging into the existence of impersonal Brahman. The demigods are powerful living entities appointed by the Supreme Lord for the maintenance and supervision of all material functions, like the heating, watering, and lighting of the universe. Those who are interested in material benefits worship the demigods by various sacrifices according to the Vedic rituals. They are called bhav-ishvara-vadi, or believers in many gods. But others who worship the impersonal feature of the Absolute Truth and regard the forms of the demigods as temporary sacrifice their individual selves in the supreme fire and thus end their individual existences by merging into the existence of the supreme. Such impersonalists sacrifice their time in philosophical speculation to understand the transcendental nature of the supreme. In other words, the fruitive workers sacrifice their material possessions for material enjoyment, whereas the impersonalist sacrifices his material designations with a view to merging into the existence of the supreme. For the impersonalist, the fire altar of sacrifice is the Supreme Brahman, and the offering is the self being consumed by the fire of Brahman. The Krishna conscious person, like Arjuna, however, sacrifices everything for the satisfaction of Krishna, and thus all his material possessions as well as his own self, everything, is sacrificed for Krishna. Thus, he is the first class yogi, but he does not lose his individual existence. So, sacrifice is kind of a universal principle. Even in the ordinary person, you get married, you have a family, suddenly you have all these responsibilities, right? You have to support the wife, you have to support the kids, you have to pay the mortgage, you have to really worry about the kids' college education now, you know, $30,000-$40,000 a year, you got to save for that. So if he's dutiful, he'll sacrifice, you know, so much to go to work every morning, so many different things, right? So, but the end result, what's the purpose of the sacrifice? You sacrifice your time, your life energy, everything, for, you know, the pleasures that come from household life. Okay, you see your kid grow up, you have your exchange with your wife, family, everything like that. Those are temporary benefits. Same thing is true for those who say, okay, I know that this material, this world is not very pleasant, but the higher world, Indra's, you know, gardens. Bhagavatam has some very nice description also. The Nandakanana, this is the gardens, you know, where the nymphs are dancing, you know, and you have many, many years you can live like that, you know. Perfect weather, beautiful fragrances, flowers, you know, idyllic. So, we'll sacrifice to go there. We can live there for many thousands of years and won't have to face all the difficulties here. So people have faith in that, and there are Vedic hymns and Vedic mantras to chant. And so that's another kind of sacrifice. That's daivam eva pare yagyam. The yogis, they also, let's see, they're not mentioned here, but yogina payupasate, that they also sacrifice their time, they perform so many austerities to attain, say, siddhis, you know, different powers, to go to higher planets, janaloka, tapaloka, maharloka. These are higher states of existence from this world. So that's another, you know, goal, and there's also a process of sacrifice to get there. So those who are intelligent, they sacrifice for the ultimate goal. You know, this is the idea. It's mentioned in the 11th canto, this famous verse. What is it? Krishna Varnam, Tvisha Krishnam, Sango Pangastra Parshadam. Yagya, the word yagya is there, Yagya Sankitana Prayaya Janti Hisumedasam. That in this age, Krishna appears as an incarnation whose complexion is not blackish. And he's always chanting the name Krishna. The two syllables, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. That's what Krishna Varna means. And he appears with his associates, with his intimate associates in a larger circle like that, with his weapons, the holy name. And those who are intelligent, Sumedasa, will worship this incarnation chiefly, not exclusively, but chiefly by Sankirtan, Yagya. The word Yagya is used. Yagya Sankirtana Praya Yajantihi Sumedasa. Now, what's the goal of that Yagya? What is the goal? There's always have to be a goal. So the goal of that sacrifice is called the Panchama Purushartha. Let's go through the Purushartas now. We'll have a review. It's always good to review these things. So generally they say that there are these four goals of human life. Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. Okay? So Dharma in this context would probably be called religiosity. It's not pure Dharma. It's not Sanatana Dharma. But it's that kind of religion that will bring you benefits in this world. So the goal is artha. Artha generally means wealth in this context. So by being pious and self-controlled and religious, one can prosper in this world. You know, so that's dharma artha. And with that artha, one can enjoy, one can fulfill one's desires. Kama. Let's see if you can close the back door. So dharma artha kama. Dharma artha kama. So generally speaking, people... they've lost the ordinary sense of religiousness, worshiping God in a church or like that, because they worship at the altar of technology and modern science. They think that that will provide the solutions to the problems of scarcity and whatever. And so generally you have two things going on now, artha and kama, making money and spending it on sense gratification. Now, those who are a little intelligent, who are exposed to the Bhagavad Gita or other books of Eastern thought in general, will realize that this is not a very good proposition, because even if you enjoy for some time, you're going to have to take birth again, you see. So they may get into worshipping some demigods to go to the higher planets. But those who are really intelligent will strive for moksha. Moksha is liberation. So the four things... religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation, otherwise known as dharma, artha, kama, moksha. These are the four general principles of human endeavor. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us that there is a fifth, that is the ultimate purushartha. Purushartha means goals for human life, for men, for human beings. And what is that Panchama Purushartha? Prema. There's this nice little phrase, you know, it's maybe nice, maybe you can take notes next time. Prema Pumarto Mahan. Simple phrase, prema pum arto maha. So let's see what it means. Here's that word arta again. Because in general, arta means something of value. Now in the context of dharma, arta, kama, moksha, arta is in there, but there it means money or wealth. But all of them are purushartas, you know, they're human goals. So prema pum arta maha. Now pum is a shortened form of the word punksa, which means human being, person. And prema is love of God. And mahan means great. So prema is the great goal of human life. It includes all the others in the sense of anything, any play. No one really wants to go to a garden. One wants to enjoy, right? And a garden is a much nicer place to be than a big, you know, stinky city street with all of the fumes and everything, you know. So you go. People go to gardens. They go to sylvan places. They go to Yellowstone or, you know, parks somewhere, right? But what you want out of it is the sense of peace and happiness and pleasure. So really, the goal of life in general for every living entity is pleasure, ananda. You don't want it to end. You want it to increase. You know. So do these other goals give you that? Can you find it in nandana kanana? Can we find it in getting a house here? Can we find it in this marriage, that person, this thing, whatever you're looking for? And the answer is no. That's the first sense of intelligence. That, no, we can't. I mean, just by experience and by seeing others fail and failing ourselves in our endeavor to reach that platform of peace and happiness in this world, even if you do gain the thing that you think will make you happy, after some time, that very thing doesn't disappoint. It must. It must. Whether it's a thing or a person or an experience or anything. Because you change and it changes. Right? You have your... I remember Divya Gyan. You remember Divya Gyan? I don't know if you met him. Anyway, he was my roommate. That was going on 20 years now. So, nice guy. Nice devotee, you know. And he got initiated. He was Bhakta Dorian. When he came and he moved in with me, he was an audiophile. He had, you know, audiophile. He had the money to do it. Huge speakers. I'd never seen anything. The floor to the ceiling. Big, skinny speakers. Now, of course, we were using them, you know, to play, you know, Prabhupada saying, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. But the speakers were there, part of his previous setup, playing records. You know, the audio files, they can hear more nuances of sound. It's better than the CDs, you know, right? But that's pretty expensive, you know, to maintain a whole system, you know, with a turntable and a whole thing, you know, and the tubes and that. So he was into that. Now, of course, he became a devotee, and, you know, he lost his attachment to it. All he had were those speakers. That was all that was left from it. But the idea is that people pay thousands and thousands of dollars, right, in order to set up their room. You know, if you have the facility and you know, to listen to Mozart or something, you know, really nicely, and you sit back there. But how long can you do that? All right, at a certain time, and then at a certain point, the system breaks, tube breaks. You know, or at best case scenario, you yourself can't hear as well. Right, the whole system for you hearing and experience goes, and all the system is left there gathering dust. You can't appreciate it anymore. You see what I mean? So everything is like that. Cruise ships, anything you may think of. Beginning, middle, end. And then it disappoints. So the intelligent person tries to reach that platform or that state where it doesn't end. And that means there's a certain kind of jagya, sacrifice, a certain kind of tapa, that's austerity, a certain kind of karma, activity, a certain kind of dana, charity, a certain kind of yoga, you know, practice of self-control. All of those things are mentioned here. In the 18th chapter, Krishna will go through each of those and describe, oh, they're different modes of nature. You can have, you know, activity, certainly in the mode of goodness, passion, or ignorance. But there can also be tapasya in the mode of ignorance. Tapasya is not inherently spiritual. Tapasya simply means austerity. You know, people perform all kinds of austerities for different goals. And the goals and the consciousness you do it in and the way you do it is determined by the mode. You know, you go to India, you know, India has everything, the best and the worst. It also has, you know, tantra, you know, tantric systems by which you perform, you know, certain processes, you know, worship a dead body, this or that, your skulls, tamasic, for the purpose of killing your enemy, getting a power by which you can annihilate your enemy, whatever like that. There are sacrifices like that, there are processes like that. I remember reading a story of a devotee before he came in the movement. He was mixing with that. Luckily, he got away from that scene, you know. He was almost sacrificed. Human sacrifice. Kali. We read in the Bhagavatam. Judd Bharat. He was captured. They were going to sacrifice Judd Bharat. Kali broke out and killed all the, you know, dacoits. Mode of ignorance, you know. For the purpose of what? Nothing transcendental, you know. So, the idea is by good association, by genuine knowledge, we can know how to perform the proper sacrifice, tapasya, austerity, charity, all of these activities. And here specifically, sacrifice is being mentioned. And Prabhupada is giving us a little explanation of the way people can get diverted. Sacrifice to many gods. Many of the Hindus, they come here, you know. Now, many of them are very, very good. They understand, you know, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the demigods are his servants. But there's many others who just, they're covering their bases, you know. And we go to the Christian temple, go to this temple, go to that temple. At home we have this Baba, that Baba, you know, have the little altar to Shiva over there, you know. Just, why not cover all your bases, right? You know. So that's called Bhav Ishwaravadi. The word is used, Bahu Ishwara, many Ishwaras, many gods. Pantheism or polytheism. Polytheism. There are many gods, there's forest gods, this god, that god. And then you have to, you know, if you really believe that, oh my god, you know, did we worship this god properly? Did we worship that god properly? You can see the anxiety. So Krishna consciousness is so wonderful because you realize, from Krishna's own words here, he is the lord of all these gods. You simply satisfy Krishna and they'll all be satisfied. There's a nice verse in the Bhagavatam. Yatataro mula nishechanena chipyanti tatskanda bujopashaka pranopahara chayatendriyanam tataiva savarhanam achyuteja. So this is a famous analogy of watering the root of the tree. Yatataro mula. Mula is a root. When you water the root of the tree, then all of the branches and the leaves and the flowers and the fruits become satisfied, right? Similarly, when you take food in the stomach, then the digestion takes place and you get strength. All of the organs get strength. In a similar way, when you serve Krishna, Achyuta, all of the gods become satisfied. You know? And the gods, they're running everything. In other words, the rain comes on time, you know, your the health is there, social peace, all the things that the gods give us. You know, not too much heat, not too much cold, you know. Why, you know, I read, they don't call it climate change anymore. It's just called weird weather. That's the result. Well, in some quarters, you know. Because it's too complicated. It's not just global warming. Some places get colder. You know, you get extreme weather conditions. So why is that happening? As we were explaining this morning, there's a person behind everything. Everything. These, you know, it's interesting. They name the hurricanes, right? Now they're not just women. I mean, my day was all girls, but there was, you know, since feminism, they alternate, right? It doesn't matter. But the point is, there is a person there, maybe not a personality of the hurricane, or that's possible, but there's a person governing the weather and giving the results of sin. You know, all of this burning fossil fuels, technology, artificial life, general horribleness, you know, vikarma all over the place. Of course there's going to be a reaction. You know, nature moves in its own speed, so we may not see it today or tomorrow, although now, you know, we're starting to see so many extreme things, extreme weather. Just in my being, you know, I've been in this one spot for 22 years, in San Diego, more or less. I've lived here constantly. And I've seen a big change in the weather. You know, there's not as much rain as there used to be. We used to have a pretty good rainy season in December, January. Now it's very spotty. You know, we used to get some big downpours. It used to flood back here on Hornblende. And this house, which is a little lower, would always get flooded. That's why you see still some sandbags over there if you walked up to Hornblin. But when is the last time that happened? You know, I can't remember. Years and years. Anyway, there's a person behind it. So if the whole world, you know, is serving Krishna, and this is the way it was during the reign of, say, Maharaj Brihad and Maharaj Yudhishthir, it's described how the rains came at the right proportion, at the right time. You know, it even rained at night, not during the day, you know. And the cows were so happy, they weren't being slaughtered. Milk was just oozing out of their udders and muddying the fields. There's a verse like that. I forget the Sanskrit. You know? But that's just one example. Because the gods are pleased. They're in control. You know, that's what we don't recognize. So that's the idea. Now, Krishna is going to give us some examples of different kinds of sacrifice. But the theme throughout, and Prabhupada will constantly be speaking about it in the purport, is we have our sacrifice. It's easy to perform. Doesn't require any money. You know, and it takes you beyond any of the results of all of these other sacrifices. Sankirtan Jagya, the perfect sacrifice for this age. Any questions? Yes, Prabhu.
There was, you said there was the four
Purusharthas.
Purusharthas and then the Mahatva.
The fifth one.
The fifth one.
Prema. Prema. So you have Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, Prema. Prema is love for Krishna.
Love for Krishna.
Love for Krishna. Pure love for Krishna is prema. And we, you know, this whole process is really meant to evoke that, or revive our original prema for Krishna. And it includes, if you get prema, you get moksha. You automatically get moksha. You don't have to try for it separately. You know, those who are trying to lose their identity, this is artificial. You can't lose your identity. We are eternal individual souls. We can get ourselves into a state where we think that we've lost our identity. But ultimately, the pure desire of the soul, which is to interact and to have relationships, will overwhelm us and will come back down to this material world. That's spoken of in Bhagavatam. Because of the aversion to serving Krishna's lotus feet, and you can imagine the kind of austerities you have to perform. You know, if stopping all sensation, all thought. I mean, just the very idea of it is inconceivable. But that's what they try to do. It's really repression, because they're afraid of a spiritual form, Krishna's form, and that's Maya. You know, and your form, this is also Maya. Everything is Maya. That's what they call Maya bodies. You know, but it's completely artificial. You cannot annihilate the individual soul. The individual soul always remains infinitesimal, part and parcel of Krishna, the Supreme. That's right at the beginning of the second chapter, right?
Since we're all covered by, you get covered by the material world, is everybody original, like in their original state, has the love for Krishna?
Uh-huh. Yeah, every living entity, and there are countless living entities, you know, there's only a relative few of us in human bodies. They're all originally Krishna conscious beings. This is the Prabhupada's famous statement on the record album address. We are all originally Krishna conscious, but we've forgotten that, and now we are struggling hard with the material energy. So it's practically, you know, mind-boggling to think about it, that every single living being struggling in this, you know, with Maya, ignorance in the material world, is originally Krishna conscious. And so, you know, this is another, the sense of urgency, because this rare human life, it's so rare. Everyone gets the human life eventually, you know, because that, the lower species, they're simply burning off karma. They're not invoking, they're not getting any karma. You know, the lion, you know, grabs that gazelle or whatever and eats the gazelle. There's no karma there. That's what lions do, you know. But after that lion body, you come up, you know, to say a cow body. You said that you come from the cows. And then eventually you get the human body. But what kind of human body? What is your association? What is the family? What is the culture you grow up in? So, but still, human body is very rare. And so in this human body, when we get the great fortune of association with this knowledge through the Acharya and the Guru, Brahmanda Brahmate Kon Bhagyavan Jeev, the fortunate Jeeva, a soul, who, wandering up and down the universe and up and down the species, just wandering, Brahmanda, wandering in the egg. This is like an egg-like universe because it's like a big open space covered by a coverings of earth, water, fire, air, ether, if you read, you know, the literature. So it's called Brahmanda. But the Bhagyavan Jeev, the fortunate soul, Bhagyavan Jeev, Guru Krishna Pasare Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. There's a seed. He gets the seed of the creeper of bhakti by the mercy of both Krishna and Guru. You know, the Guru is sent by Krishna, and the Guru points one to Krishna. So both the mercy is necessary. And then that seed only comes in the association of devotees. So it's a very rare and wonderful thing. We shouldn't waste it. We should appreciate it. And then you have to cultivate that creeper, and let the, you know, by the watering process of hearing and chanting, chiefly. And then the creeper starts to grow nicely, and you have to fence it off because there's so many weeds growing. The weeds are the offenses, material desires, you know. We've been cultivating those nicely for so many births, so that we have to become serious gardeners and uproot the weeds and just water the creeper so it grows, becomes healthy. It's a very nice analogy. Lord Chaitanya's teachings to Rupa Goswami, 19th chapter of the Madhya Lila, he talks about this. And then what do you learn? You know, in that, so, this is what you should strive for, and this is how you should strive. In other words, another two words you can learn is sadhana. Maybe you know sadhana. Right? Sadhana means the practice. But sadhana doesn't just mean bhakti practice or yoga practice. Anything you want to accomplish, there has to be a means of getting there, of doing it, right? So the sadhana, and at the end of the sadhana is the sadhya, what you get from the sadhana, the goal. You know, education, you work hard, you take your test, you pay your money, you know, and tuition, you end up with your debt, and you get your precious degree, which unfortunately isn't worth much for you now. So I got my sadhya, and I got to move back home, because I can't find a job. That's what's going on. But at least the goal is there, and if you know, in the process. So the sadhana is pure bhakti. All the things we do, the chanting, the do's and the don'ts. You know, that's the summary. There's so many things to do, and so many things not to do. And then from that, then you undergo a transformation. Your consciousness is transformed. That's the whole idea. And ultimately, this attraction for Krishna awakens, taste for the holy name awakens, then attraction for Krishna, and then ecstasy, you know, and then finally prema. It's a long road, but there are definite steps, and you know, if we have the right guides and we're determined, we can actually follow that road. That's why it's called Bhakti Marga. You know what marga means? Path. The path. The path. The bhakti path. Okay. Yes, Prabhu.
Not to belittle devotees who are in this relationship with Krishna, but the relationship of neutrality or honor reverence, are they considered in prema as well?
Well, there's two things you mentioned there. The awe and reverence is generally reserved for dasya ras. The shanta ras is kind of a passive state. There is appreciation of Krishna and happiness just being Krishna conscious and freedom from all material desire. But there's no active sense of service there. So one can be in prema. In that, it's a lower state, and the thing is, when you're really in prema, love, you want to serve the beloved. So it's kind of a preliminary state, and it's often not even included amongst the bhakti rasas. It's kind of the basis. It's that which is present in all the other rasas. But even in Vrindavan, you'll find, you know, Goloka Vrindavan, you'll find those that are kind of passive, like the land. You know, it's kind of in that shanta ras state, and it's just hoping, you know, that Krishna will walk on it, you know, like that. So, but the prema is really begins in a full sense in the dasya ras, in the servant mood. Then you can really serve with love, and in our sampradaya, it's generally the top three or even, you know, rasas, the sakya ras, friendly ras, parental and conjugal that are prominent. And even, I would say, the conjugal rasa is really much more prominent. That's the full flowering of loving relation with Krishna. Yeah. Okay, why don't we... okay, we can do one or two more here. Where were we? Text 26? Shrotradi nindriyanyanye Sagyamagni shujufmadi Shabdadin vishayananya Indriyagni shujuvati. Some, the unadulterated brahmacharis, sacrifice the hearing process and the senses in the fire of the mental control. And others, the regulated householders, sacrifice the objects of the senses in the fire of the senses. Purport. The members of the four divisions of human life, namely the brahmachari, the grahastra, the vanaprastha, and the sannyasi, are all meant to become perfect yogis or transcendentalists. Since human life is not meant for our enjoying sense gratification like the animals, the four orders of human life are so arranged that one may become perfect in spiritual life. The brahmacharis, or students under the care of a bona fide spiritual master, control the mind by abstaining from sense gratification. A brahmachari hears only words concerning Krishna consciousness. Hearing is the basic principle for understanding, and therefore the pure brahmachari engages fully in Hariya Namanu Kirtanam, chanting and hearing the glories of the Lord. He restrains himself from the vibrations of material sounds, and his hearing is engaged in the transcendental sound vibration of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Similarly, the householders who have some license for sense gratification perform such acts with great restraint. Sex life, intoxication, and meat eating are general tendencies of human society. But a regulated householder does not indulge in unrestricted sex life and other sense gratification. Marriage on the principles of religious life is therefore current in all civilized human society, because that is the way for restricted sex life. This restricted, unattached sex life is also a kind of yajna, because the restricted householder sacrifices his general tendency towards sense gratification for higher transcendental life. So it's kind of sacrifices you see is all pervading throughout the Veda culture, this varnashram system. And, you know, the brahmachari life is meant for a life of self-control and self-restraint and training. Most brahmacharis, I would say, will eventually enter grihastha ashram. But if one is trained in this principle of self-control and sacrifice, then grihastha ashram can be successful, in that it's not just an ashram, and, you know, or a situation in which you lose your sense of sacrifice for a higher purpose. So therefore, you know, all of these principles that are there in the different ashrams, they're meant to be ashrams. Ashram means a shelter, a spiritual situation. And the central principle of the spiritual situation is to restrict and to direct, to control the lower self by the higher self. And for the brahmachari, hearing only words concerning Krishna consciousness and acting only for Krishna consciousness, for the benefit of the guru, for the benefit of the Krishna himself, this is great training. And it provides a defense against the tendency always of the senses to go after objects and to run riot and to take the consciousness with it. So, again, this principle of sacrifice, you see, these words would be, the sacrifice is used in all of these verses, or they're equivalent. And Prabhupada makes it clear, well, what are the brahmacharis sacrificing? Well, they're sacrificing a lot here. The sound, chiefly the sound. Shrotra adini means sound, etc. And why is that? Because sound is the basic principle that forms our consciousness. You know, if you control what you hear and what you chant, and it's always transcendental sound vibration, then you quickly advance. You know, Krishna purifies from within all the material tendencies. So that's the chief means by which the brahmachari or any Krishna conscious devotee stays Krishna conscious, is through hearing transcendental sound and vibrating transcendental sound. And as for the householders, well, they're sacrificing the general tendency to enjoy for higher purpose. Grihastha ashram is meant to be a stage that culminates in, you know, retired life and then sannyas. It's not meant to be for all the days, as Prabhupada said. It's a stage or a station in life. So this is the point. There is again margas, there are paths to go on, and if we can follow it, we succeed. If we deviate, then it slows our progress. It'll slow our progress. So Krishna is giving us very good instruction here, and it'll all kind of culminate in text 34, which is a very essential verse about the Gita. About the Guru. Okay, any final question, comment before we adjourn for our Sankirtan Jagya? We can realize the importance of this class. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.